Hi, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them. And today, what happens when an indigenous community guards its language so closely, that it almost becomes a secret, not to be shared even with other tribal members? Seems crazy, right? A language that goes back hundreds, thousands of years, containing, as all languages do, expressions of the culture of its speakers, linguistic artifacts, cultural memory. Are those speakers prepared to let the language die for fear that allowing it to survive might destroy something even larger? In today's pod, the story of how a few members of the Keres-speaking community in New Mexico tried to revive their language and the trouble they ran into from elders within the community.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.
Jenny Monet is a Laguna tribal member. She grew up on the Laguna Pueblo Reservation. It's pretty close to Albuquerque. Jenny moved away long ago, but she still goes back from time to time. And one of those times, she came across some audio recordings at the tribal library.
What are you doing? Zikwik yekoya. Zikwik yekoya.
There are a bunch of expressions like this, simple questions and greetings, first in English, then in Keres, which is also known as Keresan. It's sort of a basic phrasebook on tape.
Stay strong and healthy.
Jenny says no one knows anymore when this was recorded or why. I mean, it seems to be an attempt to pass the Keres language on to people who don't speak it. But to who exactly? Young people? Adults? Tribal members? Outsiders? It's not clear. Jenny has some experience of how difficult it is to get fellow members of her community to share the language. Here's her story.
My grandmother, June Saraceno, used to be teased for how she spoke our ancestral language.
Sometimes it's kind of hard to express something in Indian, especially some words that you don't know if that's the right word.
This is tape from a conversation we had in her living room about 10 years ago. I'd asked June for a brief lesson in Keres. Did you hear how she called it Indian? That's the way she'd always describe the language, all those summers I'd spent growing up with her on the reservation. The Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico was really the only place June had ever lived, except for that year or two when she studied business administration in nearby Albuquerque. After graduation, she took a secretary's job at the newly built elementary school in Laguna, and she ended up working there for the next 30 years.
Well, you know, where I have been working, I don't use much Indian, but when old grandma was living, my mom's mom, she wants to talk to me, and she always pulled me close to her. And then she'll say to me in Indian, Kaimina Trutanich, that means, are you still working? I said, Ha, Wamina Sutanich, that means, yes, Grandma, I'm still working.
June was raised in a home where many languages were spoken. Keres, Spanish, Navajo. It was a reflection of the rich diversity of the Pueblo, gripped by Spanish colonization in the 17th century. But it was the English language that her mother, my great-grandmother, said would bring her a better life. That notion had been spread all the way from the Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania, where June's father, my great-grandfather, had been sent away for a white man's education. There, the slogan was, quote, kill the Indian, save the man. And so without question, June learned to value formal education and assimilation over a centuries-old language. June's cousin, Louis Daly, had for the most part stayed put on the Pueblo. He was fluent in Keres, and he let June know that she wasn't.
He always talks to me in Indian because he said that we are Indians and we're supposed to talk Indian, but you're always talking English. Well, it's easier for me because sometimes some of the words I always say wrong, I said, and they always make fun of me, I said.
Like what words?
I can't remember what it was. Oh, maybe it will come back to me, but it was something. And they all laughed at me, and then I said, I'll say it my way. And then he said, well, they're going to laugh at you because you're not pronouncing it right. Oh, okay, well, I won't use that word then, I said.
June wasn't the only one who was ridiculed for her less than perfect Karas.
It's happened to me.
Really? Mm-hmm. To you?
Mm-hmm.
When
I was relearning the language in the village meeting, because a lot of guys down there speak really well.
This is Stan Lucero. He's 69 and knew my grandmother. They were neighbors for years. He says he was given a hard time, too, about Karas. And it didn't seem to matter among his peers that he was also a tribal councilman at the time, where he was especially put on the spot during council meetings.
I'll say the minutes in Laguna. And every once in a while, I'd say the word, and they'd start laughing, and they says, it's not, you didn't say it right.
Stan first left to join the military and then stayed away for a good-paying job in California. When he returned to the Pueblo, he noticed he'd lost his handle on the language.
But then my mentors, and these are the old guys, he said, don't worry about them laughing. You just keep practicing, it'll come to you. You just keep practicing. And they were right. They were very encouraging.
Stan says if it hadn't been for those old guys, he might have just given up the way he said so many other Lagunas have done. I first met Stan that same summer. I had asked June to teach me Karas in her living room. He agreed to work with me on an oral history project as a way to preserve the language, make it more accessible. It came at a point in my life when I was reconnecting with my roots. Years had passed since I had spent an entire summer on the Pueblo, and now that I was doing just that, I wanted to make good use of my time. Also, there was something else happening back then. Indigenous languages were disappearing. Tribes had started noticing there were fewer fluent speakers in their communities, and there became a real push across Indian country to try and preserve these languages, even among my friends. So I grew inspired to do something. But that oral history project failed even before it got off the ground. The tribal council got spooked by, of all things, a bunch of Boy Scouts.
Whatever happened to that? It was going really well for like a month or so. We got equipment through the school. I mean, all these things were kind of happening in a really progressive way. Do you remember what happened to that?
I made a presentation to council. I think what they were afraid of is that, like that scout troop or the Kasharis, you know, I think they were afraid of that happening.
Before my recent visit with Stan, I'd never even heard of this group, the Kasharis. But for years, this Boy Scout troop from La Junta, Colorado, had been burning in Laguna's memory.
Ladies and gentlemen, here come the Kashari Indians.
The troop borrowed the Hopi word, Kashari, as its tribal namesake. But of course, I mean, there's no such thing as a Kashari tribe. And in 1989, the scouts were featured in a documentary. In the film, you see these mostly white boys dancing around, faces painted, and dressed in mimicked, leathered, and feathered regalia. One of their acts was an interpretation of the Eagle Dance, one of the most sacred dances of the Pueblo Indians.
But these guys are, I don't know what they're doing with it. And so it offends me personally.
A lot of people on the Pueblo were offended, and understandably so. From this blatant cultural appropriation grew a deep suspicion of anything that could further harm the purity of the Pueblo, including Stan and I's language project.
And so that was the biggest stumbling block. That's why I never went any further than that.
There are two versions of Karas spoken across the Pueblo. The one that I grew up hearing, which includes everyday greetings and common expressions. And then the other version that gets spoken only inside the Kiva, the sacred Pueblo prayer space. Stan says this is where sharing the knowledge of Karas gets hung up. Fluent tribal leaders, the supposed gatekeepers of the language, they fear the sacred version could get into the wrong hands.
I think they're afraid of it leaving the reservation and everybody start digging into our history and some of our ceremonies. There's no reason why you can't learn the conversational and yet still be able to observe the ceremonial separately.
Do you feel this protectiveness, this guardedness is kind of maybe backfiring in a way that no one is going to get to learn it then?
That's my fear right there. Nowadays, I think the expectation is too much. Unless you were brought up really the old way, it's hard for folks to be that astute in the language.
I know no one really who's brought up the old way. Like me, many of today's tribal members are descendants of boarding school survivors or grandparents who moved to urban cities as part of government-led relocation projects. But even through all of this, the language has survived. It's only now that Kara's is really severely threatened. The data is poor, but Stan believes less than a third of the tribal population is fluent. So unlike other neighboring pueblos that are actively practicing Kara's revitalization, in Laguna, none of this is really happening.
My name is Tyra Lovato. I'm 12 years old.
And do you have any traditional names that any of your family has given you?
Heyash means fog.
Tyra is one of those exceptions. She comes from a family where Kara's is spoken, in the home, where grandparents encourage her to speak it.
My grandma always taught me by a music song called Boreika, means butterfly, and I will always listen to it. My grandpa plays it to me like every night, so that's how I started telling my grandma that we should start doing the language.
And is it in Kara's?
Yes.
Can you sing it for me? Or would...
I can sing a little bit. So, Boreika, Boreika, Weyoshino Mayogaiwa, Heya, 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 Ha.
Kara's is sometimes taught at Tyra's school, where she says some of her classmates struggle to keep up with learning the language. But rather than tease them in the way that June or Stan were treated, she's supportive.
Like we say, gume hushdeme means be strong and don't be, ever be afraid. It's all about trying to teach the small kids, and then they can start speaking it to their other, like their moms and dads. It's like a tree. It starts from a plant, then it starts making more branches.
If Tyra represents new hope for the survival of Kara's in Laguna, then so too does Clifford Jose.
Another hot day. It's supposed to rain today, so I hope it rains today.
I first met Clifford in the village of Encinel. A community Kara's class had just been canceled at the last minute. This frustrated Clifford. As an appointed village leader known as a mayoromo, he felt a personal responsibility to help grow his community.
Now look at these little kids. I wish they would learn a lot. It's best we start when we're young.
At 64 years old, Clifford had only begun to start learning Kara's. His appointment as a village leader forced this education.
When I got elected, I let the people know that I don't speak my language that good. I understand a little bit. I can't speak it. I never taken part. So the first year they told me that I had to go into the Kiva every now and then, but I let them know that I was never initiated.
Clifford's initiation into Kiva society required acceptance among other tribal and religious leaders in the village, men who Clifford says continue to help him along.
It feels good. I was asking, what they say? What does this mean? Why do we do this? Why do we do that? And they explained it to me. That's how we learn. We learn from one another.
But even as Clifford finally embraces this part of his pueblo identity, there's no denying that his journey is rooted in old ways.
I was always told when it's your time, you'll know when it's your time. You know when you're ready to accept all this and learn.
A popular sentiment in Laguna and in other tribal communities is that if you want to learn the ways, the language, the culture, then you should move back to the reservation, contribute to tribal community. Then maybe, like Clifford, cultural doors will start to open. I respect this approach completely, and if I believe that making such a move would bring me closer to my language, I'd settle back on the res without question. But I guess for me, what I need to see is a commitment from the tribe itself, that it even wants tribal members like me to carry on this language and to share it with others the way that my grandmother did with me before she passed on. It's a shame, because in an age where Lakota can be downloaded on smartphones and Star Wars can be watched in Navajo, there has got to be another way for Karas.
Jenny Monet is a Laguna tribal member. She's also an independent audio producer and the host of the brand new podcast, Still Here, Modern Stories of Resilience Indigenously Told. Still Here. Great name. You can see some of Jenny's photos from the Laguna Pueblo, including a lovely one of Jenny and her grandmother June. They're at pri.org/language. And if you're wondering about the Kashari Indian dancers, you know, that fake tribe invented by the Boy Scouts, whether they still exist today and whether they perform, well, they do. But last year, in 2015, the Kashari dancers canceled something that they call their Winter Night Dances, after complaints from the Hopi tribe that they were mimicking the sacred dances of Hopi and Pueblo Native Americans. Jenny also mentioned the Lakota, who've been much in the news recently with all the coverage of that protest around the Dakota Access Pipeline near Standing Rock. As it happens, I was there recently, and so listen out for an episode pretty soon on how reforms in the spelling of the old Lakota language are having an impact on the revival of the language, which seems especially pertinent at this time in the history of the Lakota Sioux people. Okay, that's it. See you on Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitter. We're at Lingo Pod. And please leave us a review wherever you listen to the podcast. Thank you. If you've noticed an uptick in our output, it's true. You know what they say about London buses? Maybe you don't. Maybe they say it about other city buses too. You wait for half an hour, then five come in a row. Sorry about that. But I gotta say, all this productivity, it's fun. We'll be back very soon, and thanks for listening.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.